Acquisition number 21590, Reel 2.
Jack Bailey, Reel 2. Can you take the story on, please?
Yes, from when did you say it started in Naples? And slowly we made our way up to Monte Camino, which is south of Cassino. And we're there for the Christmas. It was cold, wet, and awful. I lived in a dirt cave with the rest of them. Monte Camino had a monastery on the top, and that was just taken by our lot. We were told that the war does not end Christmas Day, but no one fired from the other side. It was a quiet front. So we had some Christmas dinner outside. I'm afraid the turkey was tinned, but the wine was alright and the whiskey was alright. From there we went to a place called Loro on the River Carigliano.
You said you were living in a dirt cave?
A man-made dirt cave. With a very high bank, and the nature had cut a cave into it. It's quite safe, but very cold and damp.
Why couldn't you get anything better?
There was nothing there. We could have had our bibbies up, but that was we made the best of a bad job. There were no houses in the area, except one, and the officers called that, I'm afraid. The officers liked that.
You said you moved to Loro?
Loro, L-A-U-R-O, on the south side of the Carigliano. On the north side was a place called Casaforte and Damiano Ridge. Very exposed it is because the ground slopes towards the river. And from the observation post, you can see the guns fire. If we can see them, the Germans can see them. It was very exposed, and we lost quite a few men there because the Germans hit... the shell landed by the gun and set the charge alight. I think four were burnt to death. Several died afterwards. And after Laura, we came to Melfi, M-E-L-F-I, in southern Italy, between Naples and Bari, for rest. And from there, we went back to action in a place called Acquafondapa, which is up in the hills, not all that far from Cassino, where the monastery was. I did an observation at Lake Monte Lagone, 3,000 odd feet high, and I carried all my kit out there, water, batteries. It wasn't very pleasant. An officer asked for water to shave one day, and the gunner with me said, "Sir, you can either have a water to shave in or have a cup of tea. You can't have both." So he had a cup of tea.
And it was called Monte?
Monte Lagone. L-A-G. I think it's A-N-O. I've got it written down here. And we're there for all four battles of Cassino. We're overlooking the monastery. We saw it bombed. Cassino was an absolute ruin. All shell holes, nothing else.
What, can you just say more about your work on the observation post on this mountain?
Yes, but the job was to see any activity, which usually was none, because the Germans kept themselves well hidden. But when the gun fired, you could estimate the angle from north and used to send that back to HQ with the time, and other observation posts would do the same, and you get what they call a triangle of error. They know near enough which gun was firing at them, and if necessary, took action against that one. And at night time, you could see the flash, and that gave a more accurate reading. You get within 1 or 2 degree for the flash. We saw lots of dogfights, of course, all the flying forces come over. The Poles actually took Casino, I think about May. Oh, I come back from Monte Lagonda. I got back to the unit and had to help myself work out a program for the barriers to go down. So after a struggle, worked all that out. A box barrage it was, which meant the guns lifted their range 50 yards at a time. I worked all out and they said, you get to sleep now. And I stepped all through the barrage. I never heard it. I was so tired. From there we went to Atrina, which is the next valley over. From here we heard that the second front had started from the German Nazi Lil, we called her. And that was the information the Germans gave us. Then we went right up to the Gothic line. We pursued the Germans to Po Valley, more or less. Lovely coastline there, a place called Senegalia. We used to go swimming. I've actually been shelled while we were swimming.
How did that happen?
Well, the Germans could see us from the shore of Father. Got in there and suddenly an air burst above us. We thought we'd better get out quick, which we did, of course. And from up there, we're up north of Rimini. We were called back, went to Leghorn, stayed there. We picked up on a boat, went to Marseille, right to France, to the front near Arnhem in Holland. That's the Dutch connection then. The war was getting towards its close here. I remember doing an observation post at Achterfeld. Made friends with local people and they still write to me. That's how I come on the Dutch television. We moved to a place called Beverwijk, which is on the Noordzee Canal. They gave us a wonderful welcome there because we were the first British they'd seen. I saw many friends here that still write to me. We were there about 3 or 4 weeks, then we went into near Bocholt in Germany as the army of occupation.
Had you done any observation post work in...
Oh yeah, all up to Italy after that. Several observation posts.
Did you do the same in Holland?
Yes, a place called Achterfeld in the church tower there. I just missed seeing Zeus Enquart. A few days before I got there, he came through. A major was there, and he was blindfolded. And they allowed the army to take food through to Holland. That's what he was there for. The Prince of the Netherlands, I forget his name there. Well known fellow.
Bernhard,
yeah, he was there as well. Of course, we took the Germans prisoner and disarmed them, of course. And when we got a better rate, we disarmed them there and they were marching out. But they're mostly old men, I noticed. A lot of Dutch girls were marching with them. They'd been friendly with them. They wouldn't stay behind. But we went to Bocholt, and I was an interpreter there. So I speak German. We do house searches. And there's two of us, Sid Berman. He could speak German very well. And anything that needed interpretation was there. That was sent to Fehling, Schloss Fehling. And there the SS prisoners were. And my job there was it goes to the mail and parcel, see what's in it before I let it go into the Schloss. The SS were absolutely untamable. They were a horrible lot.
In what way?
They wouldn't be subdued. Hitler was everything to them. We had the rate of one suicide a week. There was a double moat around the Schloss, and they were always jumping into it.
It was the SS who were committing suicide?
Yes, oh yeah. They're absolutely untamable. Then after that, I went to a place called Herxter, not far from Hamelin, looking after displaced people. That's people that nobody wanted. Very heartrending. They've been taken by the Germans as workers, and their own country didn't want them back. It was a dreadful affair, really. I don't know what happened at the end, but...
Did you speak to them?
Oh, yes, yeah. I spoke Italian by the time I got there. So Italian and German and smattering with Dutch, I could get on very well with them.
Which countries did these dispersed people come from?
Some come from Italy, Yugoslavia way, Hungary. Very cute, the Hungarian soldiers, they always saluted us. Very embarrassing, I think. So.
Where were these untermable SSPRWs?
Velen. V-E-L-E-N. Not far from Borken, in Germany. There I met a fellow who was in Italy. He was against us all the way up through. He was Blecher. He used to work for Lansdorf, the financier. He was a forester by trade, but had been to university for that. Very nice fellow, but I don't think about him, he was very cruel. He killed everything. Any animals, he hunted it. Like wild boar and all things like that. And his living room was full of trophies hung on the wall. I thought it was gruesome, but he loved it. I still write to a sitter because he died there. But he lived right down in Stuttgart.
Who's this?
Blecher. His name was Hubert Blecher, but her name was Maria Blecher. I make a lot of friends very easily.
Any other memories from the occupation of Germany?
I can remember in Bocholt seeing a coal train stop once, and everyone got on and threw coal off because they're so short of coal.
Did anybody try to stop them?
We didn't, no. We sympathised with them, to be honest. We've got better luck. Because it didn't affect us, did it? The Germans invited us back to Bocholder. We went back there and it was a wonderful time. So we couldn't have been all that bad as occupants. Some of our fellows married girls from there, of course, which you can never stop.
Was there any conflict at all?
No, no. I had a job of going out and interviewing people. Most people resigned to their fate, but one fellow, he's very despondent. Germany's lost, all is lost, but it was unfounded, really. They've risen up again. I was getting on very well with the Burgermeister there. Oh, we had floods at a place called Krexting. Not far from Bocholt, we were there one day, and one morning woke up, there was 3 foot of water all round. Apparently the Rhine was blocked by ice. And we're about 20 miles from the Rhine, but still flowed over, so... There was a Schloss there, but now it's a tear garden. Of course, while we were there, there's no fraternisation order still in, which meant to say you're not allowed to make friends, but that was a waste of time.
Was it observed?
No. Only in view of the officers. It was a order that can never be obeyed, actually. Because the English soldier is normally friendly.
So how did you leave the army?
I left the army when I was group 29. I left Krexting. I had the unit broke up. I had to join a Welsh unit for a while. I found that very difficult because the discipline was high there. But after a while I went to Krefeld and then demobilisation started there.
Which Welsh unit was this?
I think it was 78th. I'm not quite sure. I've got it written down somewhere. And from there went to the Hague, the Harwich down to somewhere near London. I was demobbed there and I got a civilian outfit. They couldn't get a hat to fit me because I got a rather big head. And I was free. I became a civilian. I got about £90 bonus, I call it, and about 100 days leave. I went about my own job as a lorry driver for a time.
How did you feel about the £90?
It was quite a lot of money in those days, to be honest. My army's pay was 14 shillings a week when I went in. My wife had 17 shillings, and I just give her a 3 and 6 of mine, which dropped me down to 10 and 6 months. I had to buy my own blanket out of that, which I was all a bit off. And the artillery unit had to buy their own lanyard, which is a white one for when they walked out.
How do you feel now about having served with the Royal Artillery in the war?
I wouldn't have missed it now. So they still write to each other, we still communicate, we're good, better friends.
Did the war have any after effects on you?
The only after effect now is the local political view. I fought 6.5 years to keep out of Europe. Now we seem to be going in the damn thing, which to me doesn't seem right.